on me, and also 1 Corinthians 11. A woman must not wear men's clothing, nor a man wear women's clothing, for the Lord your God detests anyone who does this. Now, I want you to realize that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. Every man who prays or prophesies with his head covered dishonors his head, and every woman who prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head. It is just as though her head were shaved. If a woman does not cover her head, she should have her hair cut off, and if it is a disgrace for a woman to have her hair cut or shaved off, she should cover her head. A man ought not to cover his head, since he is the image and glory of God, but the woman is the glory of man. For man did not come from woman, but woman from man. Neither was man created for woman, but woman for man. For this reason, and because of the angels, the woman ought to have a sign of authority on her head. In the Lord, however, woman is not independent of man, nor is man independent of woman. For as woman came from man, so also man is born of woman. But everything comes from God. Judge for yourselves. Is it proper for a woman to pray to God with her head uncovered? Does not the very nature of things teach you that if a man has long hair, it is a disgrace to him, but that if a woman has long hair, it is her glory? For long hair is given to her as a covering. If anyone wants to be contentious about this, we have no other practice, nor do the churches of God. The word of the Lord.
Dear Village Church, there are, in every generation of folks, people whose job it is to draw outside the lines. There are those always among us who are bothered by convention, bothered by rules, who want to question the status quo. I have a name for these people. I call them artists. One time, my wife went to art school at Yale University. So she was up in New Haven. And one time, the art department would try to get people in to speak. And so one time, they brought up for these young art students this artist who was living in Greenwich Village and was a practicing working artist. His name was Arakawa. This was back in the early 80s. And he brought this artist up. They brought this artist up to tell these young art students what it was like. And this artist just did not fit the mold. So he got up there, and I want to try to imitate a little bit of the way he sounded so to convey the intensity with which you experience this fellow. He came up there, and he told them, "I become artist because I don't want to die." Now, art students are somewhat shocked by this. But he is a very intense fellow, very candid, very honest, in a refreshing honesty. But my wife was very shocked. And then he said, "Before artist, I wanted to become a doctor because I want to create a monster." My wife was thinking at this point, maybe he should try parenthood. She didn't know what to think. Then he said, "You know, what do I want to do in my art? I want to make something that does this to you. That does this to you." Now, I think Arakawa was the quintessential artist, by my definition. He existed to push the envelope with every fiber of his being. He was there to move outside the lines, to break it open, to do it differently. That's what his life was about. And, you know, you don't find artists, by this definition, just in art. You find them doing other things. You find them in other occupations. And they're in that occupation trying to break it open, trying to do it differently, questioning convention, coloring outside the lines, breaking the rules. And for those folks, it makes them feel alive to be doing this. And if you feel like that, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you. And in this church of misfit toys, you are welcome. I hope that you believe me when I say, I just love you. And I hope that in this church you will find an appreciation of your calling in life. But I have to pose a question for us this morning, even for those of us who go outside the lines. Are there lines in the universe that you may not color outside of? Are there rules that you must respect? Are there certain lines that you just got to stay in? And that you'll hurt yourself and others if you go outside of? Well, Deuteronomy 22:5 says, yes, that there are. That we've been looking over these 2 weeks now, the second week. We're looking at a scriptural text here about making a purposeful distinction. And in this list of laws in chapter 22 that call us to make distinctions, we saw last week that this one stood out as a division that God felt particularly strong about keeping, this difference between men and women. We saw that the potentially offensive line that God detests this practice of stepping across these boundaries is the very reason it's a rule not to break. Because this verse tells you that it's not just a rule you're dealing with, it's a person. There's a person who stands behind the rule. If it were just a rule, then yeah, why not experiment? Break it. But there's not a rule, it's a person behind it, and he has passion about this. And his passion is to spare you a sad lifetime of trying to make for yourself lines that subtract from your humanity. Now, some people try to speculate about this law. They say, well, maybe this is not a universal moral requirement that's being made. Maybe it's something that was just spoken against what other religions were doing at the time. You know, maybe some other religions had this kind of practice in them, cross-dressing. Well, the difficulty with trying to say that is that this is the earliest reference to transvestitism in the ancient Near East. It's the earliest reference we have in this history. There's no evidence at all of this going on until centuries later in other cultures. So this is one of the things that directs us, as well as other things in the scripture, to understand this prohibition as part of God's continual moral order. It's not just a cultural or a temporal command. It's something lasting. And if that's so, friends, then losing your gender means that you lose a powerful motivating force for doing good, a motivation for actions that make you alive. And in that case, coloring outside the lines, outside of these lines, will not make you more alive, but less alive. Now, do you feel like you can just make up the lines yourself? Do you feel like you can define your manhood or your womanhood however you want, that it's plastic? Well, you know, to believe that you can make your gender into whatever you want it to be and to get everyone around you to cooperate with that definition, well, honestly, now you have to be making a lot of money to expect that to work. Do you really earn enough money to be able to do that? Define it yourself and get everyone around you to cooperate. Now, those that are gender blending, as we talked about last week, have had a great effect. But we are addressing it this morning because what I see in this blending is not just a free and happy harmony among gender-free persons. I see the attempted equality between men and women, which is good, and the Bible affirms. But what I see coming along with the blending is a lot more social awkwardness, a lot more emotional distress, I see more sexual abuse, And I see more divorce, even more suicide. And those are some of the reasons we have to attempt to talk about gender. And there are personal consequences for you. You rail, if these are lines that God has created for your good, and you rail against them, and you be your own Uberman and shake your fist at the lines that God has drawn for you, you make your own world, then you will die eventually in despair. Create your own reality, and you will sink into your own aloneness. If it's this the case, then it's not coloring outside the lines that's going to make you alive. It's God's lines that invite you into a dance that makes you feel alive again. I know there are some here that I can't really address this morning who might feel like they're not trying to color outside the lines, but that's just the way they feel. And if you have orientation issues, all I want to say is, come and talk to me. Do come and see me, because there is hope. If you are in a certain situation sexually and you want to change, you want to be different, you want to somehow honor God's lines, do come talk to me. There are others who can tell you that there is hope. Now, to venture into this territory where we're venturing this morning, of course, we're recognizing we're cutting against the grain of our culture. But my concern is that we're missing out on a much needed motivating force in our lives, as well as a beautiful picture. So that leads me to breach the topic. If you're a woman and you can only read these scriptures about gender and talk about what they don't mean, then you're not experiencing the enlivening mission of gender that God has given us. You're missing out on the dance. You're not getting the beauty of the picture. And if you're a man, and all you can do is look in the mirror, and all you can say is, so I'm a man. Well, nobody's perfect. Then you're missing out on the picture. You're missing out on the dance. You're not entering into the picture either. Now, unfortunately, we come into this territory and it's always cast as a power struggle. It's always on the TV programs, the whole gender, whenever gender issues come up, whenever sexes come up, it's always a power struggle. It paralyzes the characters, makes them unable to act. So what I'm going to try to do is draw some lines from you this morning for the scripture. Last week, Hallie, in explaining Jive Dance to us, helped me to summarize the roles as leading following. If that's the case, you know, if any kind of leadership in men is seen as aggression, if any kind of following in women is seen as a weak dependency, then there's no way we can get into this picture. So what I want to try to do is try to sketch some of the lines. I'm going to sketch seven lines for you. I'm going to draw these seven lines. Aren't the whole picture? Lines, and I'm trying to proceed carefully. These are the lines that we're meant to color inside of. And what we saw last week, going to get some of again today, you just heard this 1 Corinthians 11 passage that Esther read. I'm sorry I didn't get it into the bulletin in time, but it's 1 Corinthians 11, 3 through 16. And some of these lines we saw last week when Hallie was talking about Jive Dance to us. And as I'm learning, repetition doesn't hurt. So we're going to go over some of them again today. But here's the seven lines. If you're taking notes, you're supposed to end up with seven. Line number one, this passage tells us, the New Testament passage as well as the Old Testament passage, that men and women are absolutely equal. And, you know, what we see, one way to stress the equality of men and women is by erasing any unique significance of men and maleness and femaleness. It's a tremendous amount of envelope pushing energy goes into erasing this distinction today. The Bible affirms our equality, but in a different way. The Bible does it by saying we are different, but we're both out of God. So Paul says this in his way. He says, woman comes out of man, man is born of woman. They come out of each other, but all things come from God. the all things is what? Is maleness and femaleness. Because that's all it is. That completes the set. All things come out of God. He's saying that the reason why we're equal is that both are image bearers. Men and women, by themselves, are bearers of God's image. Line number two. The Corinthians passage is not talking about marriage, which shows us that the gender roles are there, even outside of marriage. And this is good news to half of us in the Village Church, 50% of us are single here. It's good to know that you are a man, even if you're not married, that you don't have to be married to be a woman, that this is something that we can think about. We can think about the sexes, even outside of this marriage covenant that goes on. So these are gender roles that are there with us. We see them intensely in marriage. They're with us even in other relationships in our lives. Line number three, a gender is defined in complement to the other gender. So Paul says in verse 11, a woman is not independent of man. Man needs women, and vice versa, back and forth. Man needs women to exhibit manhood, as we were talking about last week. Women needs men to exhibit womanhood in various relationships. Okay? So there's a complement, a necessary complement to the definition. That's where the definition takes place. It's line number three. Line number four, we saw so beautifully last week. As a woman and man focus on their individual roles for the sake of the dance, the beauty of the dance overshadows both. There's something much bigger that's being proclaimed that's going on here. The way that Paul talks about it in this passage shows us that's the case. Now, line number five is the main line. Okay, if you miss all the other ones, get this one. This is the main line that you got to get. Last week we saw that maintaining this distinction proclaimed something about God's redemption. Now when I say redemption, I know some of you are like, whoa, technical word. I guess your eyes gloss over. Redemption. What do I mean by redemption? Redemption is God's program of taking our sinfulness, our brokenness, and giving us a makeover to make us human again. Folks, we look terrible inside. Inside, our hearts are wearing polyester. We need a makeover. And redemption is a makeover. And the name of this show is The Divine Eye for the Broken Guy. That's all a redemption is. It's a makeover. It's a makeover on the inside. And the glory of coloring inside these lines is that by assuming our God-given roles, we're painting a picture of Jesus Christ and his glorious church. And that is line number five, the main line that Paul relates the man to Christ as he starts out in this passage and showing that the picture that we are to draw in our relationships to the opposite gender are to show forth the precious truths of Christ's action towards the church and the church's affirmation of Christ in those actions. It's about Christ and the church. If Christ is the head of man, as Paul puts it, then we must grasp the good news of Jesus Christ to get to the beauty of the lines of the sexes. We have to grasp that. We have to grasp what he did for us in order to see genders aright. We don't grasp that, doesn't make sense. Paul is saying, you cannot get to the meaning of your gender, even as a single person, without grasping that Jesus Christ came as our head. He initiated a dance of redemption in which he came and he died for us to reconcile us to God. While we were running, some of us still running, in the opposite direction, as hard as we could. And friends, that's what it means to say we need a makeover. His eye looked ahead at what we could be, and then he paid for it all. It's all expenses paid to make us well decorated on the inside. And he just stepped up to us to do that. And he led by sacrifice for those whom he calls. And because of that, we can respond and glory in that headship as the church. You got to get that line. You got to enjoy that line. You got to glory in that line to see the other lines aright. So, it leads us to line number 6. There is an asymmetry in the roles, a difference in the shape of the callings of men and women to draw out the beauty of that picture. The point is the picture, right? Remember, that was line 4. Last week, we saw them summarized as follower and leader, equally skilled as dancers. This week, 1 Corinthians 11, Paul calls it headship and glory. There's an authority, there's a headship to the male role, a glory to the female role. Now, without sidestepping this reality, I would proceed very carefully about this import. There are implications that this does not have for initiation, for jobs that women can have, things like that. We can talk about this as much as you like. We're going to have a combined QA this morning. I'm going to ask my wife to join us to take your questions, your objections, your comments. And we're going to do that somewhere in this building. After the service, we're going to try to get it started right away because of other things that are going on. But then, if you could take these roles, as a man who's thinking like Christ and is thinking, how can I take charge in a way appropriate to this relationship that addresses the woman's need, including finding out what the need is, of course. And the woman in the picture will be thinking, how can I act to help this man be like Christ in his headship, to be godly in relation to myself and to others? Now, I could talk most about this as a man, of course. When I accept the lines of gender for me, I find that I feel alive. I find that in myself, when I recognize gender, I realize that my manhood gives me a responsibility to the women around me. It quickens me. It quickens me to do things I need to do in the various relationships that I have. It gives me a reason to take responsibility as Christ did, to lead, to protect, to provide, where before there's only selfishness and lethargy. You know, I get instead a sense of responsibility. And this will happen if you accept your gender. It will affect how you talk about women. It will affect your concern for the marriages around you. It will affect the way that you react and relate to pornography. Okay? Americans spend $8 to $10 billion a year on pornography. 25 million Americans visit a cybersex site for 1 to 10 hours each week. That's 25 million. Billions and billions of dollars into this industry. And there's, you know, the sexual abuse that comes along with that. You want to curb pornography and sexual abuse of women and the treatment of women as objects, give men back their manhood. Their real manhood. This kind of manhood. Now, I don't have a problem with porn, but I can recognize the same dynamic in my own self and the subway. If I don't have Christ's calling toward the women around me, then, friends, I do not have the energy to get up out of my seat for somebody else. I don't have the energy to give up my seat. And women don't even come onto my radar screen unless their skirt's a little too high. So it's this quickening that comes with the manhood that will allow me to act in ways that I should. What also makes it hard to see this picture, on the other hand, is that historically there have been many abuses in masculinity. And some of them have been mine. You know, as I study these lines, I see how my own failings have presented obstacles to the dance, obstacles to the picture for the women around me. In disdaining condescension, that would make even a mature woman feel patronized rather than honored and prized. There's assertiveness that's really self-assertion rather than a form of love. These kinds of things, you know, they come when roles are viewed as prerogatives rather than what the Bible presents to us, which is a call to paint within the lines of Christ. A mature man will know, as John Piper puts it, standing in the place of Christ must include a renunciation of the temptation to be Christ. But I have great hope that even this, in myself, the ever-remaining tendency to skirk or to overstep our responsibilities, need not prevent us from trying to see this picture, this beautiful picture in our lives. It comes out for men, mostly in marriage, of course, that gender-intense relationship. It comes down to the difficult decision for some of us of bread on the table. Which one of you gives up his or her art? Look at the lines of gender, where they lead, and you tell me. Through our masculinity, we can be made alive to be able to make difficult decisions like that. And so I'm made alive first in regard to my wife, but also in a different degree to the sisters in the community, and then also in subtle ways to the women on the subway. Now, where a woman celebrates its femininity, as it's brought out here, she adopts a disposition to affirm, to receive, to even enjoy, and nurture the strength and leadership in guys. Now, if that's going on in a woman, she has a career, folks. That's an exciting mission from God to benefit and help those men in her life. And it's not a non-activity. It is not a passivity. It's not an easy thing. Again, primarily to her husband, if married, and then in lesser ways, appropriate to other relationships. Even as a single woman, if you're not spending a lot of time around men, or as a single man, you're not spending a lot of time around women, as a disposition, as a readiness, your maleness, your femaleness would come through in this way. So that's line number 6. This leads us to line number 7. The line that's really brought out strongly in both passages, especially in the Deuteronomy passage, but also in the Corinthians passage, and it's really a key to understanding what the main thing Paul is trying to say in that passage. The 7th line is that gender is culturally determined, as gender is not culturally determined, but it's culturally mitigated. I'm going to tell you what I mean by that. Gender is not culturally determined, but it's culturally mitigated. It is always bound up and expressed through culture. That's why we always have to proceed so carefully in deciding about individual practices. So Paul says in 1 Corinthians 11, doesn't it, the nature of things, or nature he uses, and he uses this word nature, he's not talking about our conception of kind of post-enlightenment nature, you know. He's talking about the nature of things, what makes you feel natural, what feels natural to you. He says, does not what feel nature teach you that for a man to wear long hair is degrading to him? He asks that question. Now, Paul's not saying here that long hair on a man is sinful, or that long hair is wrong. He's asking us to recognize that there are things that feel natural to us in our culture. What you feel is currently natural, and that is expressed in cultural forms. And even those things make a distinction between a man and a woman. So Paul's saying, like in our times, Paul's saying, men wear short hair, women wear long hair. So doesn't it say something to you that regardless of what the custom is, that a man feels ashamed in violating that custom? He's trying to reason with you inside your culture, inside their culture. Paul wouldn't say that today. I doubt very much he would say it that way. He would say probably something like, well, doesn't a man who wears a skirt to a business meeting feel ashamed? Yes, right? No matter how good his legs are. Paul wouldn't say that in Scotland, right? But he would say it here. Doesn't a man who wears a skirt who visits me feel ashamed? Doesn't that tell you something? That what there are things that feel natural to you within your culture, that even so, whatever your culture is, they make a distinction between male and femaleness. Because there is gender, and it will always come out in various cultural distinctions. Now, the ingenuity of the law of Deuteronomy is that it ties this to clothing. And it's ingenious because clothing is really a way of saying your culture. It stands for your culture. Clothing is synecdoche of culture. You know that word synecdoche? It's a figure of speech that means referring to a part of something to mean the whole thing. So the captain says, all hands on deck. Hands is a synecdoche for a sailor. Right? He wants all the sailors on deck, but he refers to them by their hands. Okay, so if you say, I'm going to rent a tape, okay, you're referring to a part of the cassette that stands for the whole cassette. Synecdoche. So clothing is a synecdoche of your culture. It's a way of referring to your whole culture. And in this way, culture is like your clothing, in that you cannot escape it. Friends, you can never just step out of your culture any more than you can just go out naked. At least not yet. You gotta wear your culture. And the best you can do is make choices within that culture. And so this is why there are these laws in Deuteronomy about clothing that people find so hard to understand. You may read them and you think, oh, who cares about these clothing issues? Well, God does, because he respects and he delights in individual cultures. And he understands that clothing is a symbol of your culture. And that's the genius of the Bible and the way that it understands culture, the way that it uses it. See, the Bible never says, the Bible never comes out and says, well, dresses are for women and pants are for men. Wouldn't really work that well, say that in China, would it? Just kind of the opposite. And what might signify maleness, even here in New York, might not here in New York in the next decade. So rather, Deuteronomy says, whatever is man's dress and whatever is woman's dress in that moving target called your culture, then you respect it. And it always works. Because though it's different for each time and place, a distinction between male and female in the matter of dress is pretty much universal. Something you find in any culture. Sometimes very subtle, but they always know it from within the culture. You notice however much gender blending is going on here in our culture, there remains a men's department and a woman's department in the store. Right? And when that line is crossed in the street, when people dress on the street, we know, don't we? I mean, tourists might come in and they're clueless. It all looks crazy to them, but we know. Because it's our culture. And periodically, people try to, unisex clothing, to try to push unisex clothing. Does it ever catch on? I mean, good luck. Do you know anybody who's making money on a kind of unisex clothing store? Or are we really just all latent heterosexuals? Now, this law says to use culture and to use it to assume and express your individual calling as a man and a woman, to distinguish between men and women. Use the cultural forms available to you to send a message, I am joyfully a man, I am joyfully a woman. I'm not just looking in a mirror saying, well, you know, I'm a man, nobody's perfect. So somebody who wants to follow this law is not going to scorn or ignore the manners and customs of their culture. They're going to use them to communicate, to cultivate a pattern of complementarity in their relationships between men and women. So those are the lines, I'm sure not perfectly drawn, the best I can see to draw them. I invite us to color inside them. Let me close in this way. I'm sitting on the subway, and I'm thinking about these things, and I feel robbed. I'm saying, you know, I feel robbed. I feel like living in my current climate makes me lazy. I sit on my fat duff, and I'm immobile. I'm insensitive to the needs of the women in whom I'm in relationship or even casual relationship around me. I'm sitting here thinking about this, and I notice, catecholing to where I'm sitting, over my book, that there are two women there, and they're having trouble. They're lost. They're obviously not able to be reading where they're going on the subway. And it was this sense of thinking about this. I'm a man. I'm happy I'm a man. That got me to get up and walk over, to overcome the feeling that, oh, they're going to think I'm trying to pick them up. You know, to overcome my own desire to, you know, I want to read my book. And say, you know, you look lost. Is there anything I can do to help you? They're like, well, you know, they told us that it would be very easy to get around on the subway. I said, it's only easy after you've lived here a while. Where are you trying to go? They're trying to go here. I said, you know, I could get off of that stop. Let me just take you off. And once we get off, there are a lot of different stairways to go up to get to the right place. Just come and follow me. Walked them up to the top and said, just go around the corner here, point you down the street. That's where you're going. I said, thank you. I walked away. And I felt more alive. I felt more alive. Now you may say as a woman, you know, I don't need a man to do things for me. I'm a single woman who's survived on her own for quite a while now, in New York, no less. Thank you very much. Who are you to tell me that I need men to compliment to whom I define my womanhood? How dare you? And if you want to say that to me, you can come and say it to me in Q&A with my wife next to me. All I can say is I got to filter that through the other side of the compliment. You know, I don't feel like I need women to sacrifice my time for, sacrifice my life for, to be a man. I don't feel that way. But I've come to recognize that feeling in me as misleading. I find that I do need you. I cannot be a man without adopting a caring for, a provision-making, a protecting attitude toward the women around me. And if I don't have that, I am left with my own selfishness. We both miss the picture. So as I said, if Deuteronomy is right, then erasing this line would be something that makes us less human, not more. Make us less alive, giving us less energy to be who we were meant to be. You want to feel exotic and alive? Get made over by Christ. And then you can push this envelope within the lines. Own your gender, color inside the lines of Jesus, and explore the uncharted mystery of Christ and the Church. Amen. Would you stand with me now, please? We come now to celebrate the Eucharist in our service, the time of enjoying and drinking in, literally drinking in, what Christ has done for us, the amazing way that he has led, has become our head. The Lord be with you. Lift up your hearts. Let us give thanks to the Lord our God. It is right and our greatest joy to give you thanks and praise, O God, because in our running away, you came, Lord, and established a plan to make us over. In our ugliness, Lord, you made us beautiful. And you expressed a commitment that was just unheard of toward us, to secure us, perfect us, until we reach you in the end to be your bride. And for that, we join our voices with all the choirs of heaven in their unending hymn of praise.